And welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host, our guest author, my friend from radio, joining us from the Metro Detroit area, Teresa Tomeo. Everything's coming up rosy, 10 things my feisty Italian-American mom taught me about living a godly life, published by Sophia. Naturally available through the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. It's amazing I get to see you. We get to talk each week on the radio, but I actually can see you this time. Great to have you.
Hi. Great to see you again. Thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
That's all right. Everything's coming up rosy. Now, you always talk about your mom. What made you decide to write a book about her, kind of wise sayings?
Well, it's a great question. For many years, I actually did a talk called 10 Things I've Learned About Living a Godly Life based on the things that I heard growing up. And of course, when you're young, you think you know it all. You're not paying attention to what your parents are saying. Mm-hmm. And I used to kind of tease her because she had a very, very strong, until the day she died, had a very strong East Coast accent. So everything she said had a little bit even more of a kind of acute edge to it because of, you know, offer it up to God, put it at the foot of the cross. And I laughed and I you know, joked to her about it. But then as I was getting older and going through my own life experiences, I realized, wow, she's a real street theologian. And she was coming from a life of experience. And what she said made a lot of sense. And so I decided to write it in a book. Right. And I had a really good response from the talks, Doug, because I think it was just very real. My mother was very real. She didn't pull any punches. You know, she's 100% Italian, born and raised in Jersey City. And so she had a way of being very direct about things.
Right,
and
right.
She had probably not much of a filter, if you know what I mean. She was just very direct in her sayings. But they meant a lot.
Right. And the older you get, the filter drops away even more and more, as we know. I thought it was interesting at the very beginning of the book, you know, it made sense to say to my late mother, Rosie, thank you especially for raising me in the Catholic faith. But then you go on to say, and for my husband, Deacon Dom, thank you for loving my mother. And then you go on to say, and reminding me to appreciate Rosie despite the mother-daughter challenges. That's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, it's very interesting. And I can remember years ago hearing something that Jeanette Williams said about God putting people in our lives and having us work more closely with the people with whom we may not have a perfect relationship. Because I really, as I say in the book, was extremely close to my father. I was close to my mother, but I was closer to my father. And my father died very quickly. He died a very peaceful death, thanks be to God, on the Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows, just sat in his chair and literally went to sleep. Mm-hmm. And I always said to my husband, it would have been, not that I didn't want to take care of my mother, but my father's personality was much more conducive because he was much calmer. He didn't have a lot of, you know, he wasn't that as open with opinions as my mother was. My mother and I disagreed on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But what I found was is that God was using that time that I really redeveloped my relationship and to appreciate her differently. And then when things got rough, I would bring in the deacon, you know, King Dominic, Saint Dominic, and he could soft kind of the rough edges. But he reminded me, he says, you know, she's your mom, and I know that things are tense, but really kind of look at it from a Christian perspective. And that was huge, and that really helped me, I think, solve a lot of misunderstandings we had over the years.
Well, it's interesting, too, because in reading that and thinking about that, I think about over the years so many situations where daughters and mothers have issues going on, and sometimes you might be familiar with situations where people haven't really talked to their mother in a number of years or there really was an issue. But the thing I always notice is that when their mother's gone, it's amazing how much they miss them.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I really made an effort, especially the last couple of years, to be involved with her life, and we got to appreciate each other. And she was very proud of me. She didn't say it a lot. My father was a little bit more open about that. But if I had to go on assignment, or if I was leading a pilgrimage, if I wasn't there, my friends would always come visit. Dominic would go visit. Mm-hmm. And my friends would tell me, all she does is talk about you, which was a shock to me because mm-hmm. I didn't think she paid all that much attention to me. I didn't think she was proud of me. But again, that really was very comforting to me to hear that. And my mom, we're very much alike, and I think that's why we sometimes butt heads, because we're both extremely outgoing, extremely opinionated, very feisty. My father was much more mellow. And so, you know, we bump heads once in a while, but she was really funny and really sweet. Everybody loved her. I mean, she was so popular in the assisted living facility, so popular at our parish. Everybody knew her. My mother and her best friend Jeannie sat in the same place at Mass every week. So she had quite this effervescent personality, and she just was a very fun-loving person. And I'm just really glad I had the opportunity to put this in writing to attribute to her, to get people to think exactly about what you were just saying.
Well, one of the things I thought with the, when you were saying that too is that it's very New York Catholic from the Irish, Italian, etc. Not to get you get a big head by telling you
right.
that too many good things. You know, you get a big head.
Yeah. Well, she would say that to me. You know, she'd say so many things, it was always, you know, like Dominic had the answer to everything. One time she asked me, this is a really funny story, if you appreciate, she called me once, so this was years ago when she was in a Bible study at our parish, and she called me one day and she had a question about scripture. And I'm thinking, well, I can answer this. I host a radio show, and I've got a couple of, my husband's a deacon, and I've been in Bible study. So I answered the question. I thought I answered it quite well, and she says, that's very interesting. When's your husband coming home? Have him call me. Like, I'm like, hello. I thought I did a thorough job of answering that question, but apparently not enough. But she always had a way of keeping me very level-headed.
Right. You talk about the idea about, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, the idea that common sense isn't so common anymore. Right is wrong. Everything's kind of topsy-turvy. Our current situation is much like the title and refrained a popular country song I had never heard. God is great. Beer is good. People are crazy.
Yeah, that's one of Dominic's. My husband's a country music fan, and that song, although it's about probably 15 years old by now, I mean, if you think about those words, it's very, very true. And you and I were just talking before our interview about, did we ever think, you know, and you and I have been out in the world. We both worked in secular media. We've seen a lot of stuff. But you and I were both saying we just didn't think it could get any crazier than it is now. I mean, literally, right is wrong. The world is upside down. And so, again, I think having something like this from my mom with these very basic ideas of right is wrong, God is good, I think it's just really important to get people back to basics. And I think we're really doing that well now in the Catholic Church. We have the Eucharistic Congress. We have so many amazing apostolates, E.W. Chan's ministry, what we do in radio and TV. It reminds people that there is natural law. There is objective truth. We have to get back to that, and my mom helped me stay in that direction.
Well, it's interesting too with that, because we live in the world of the expert, where so much is driven by what some expert was starting to say on the Phil Donahue show 30 or 40 years ago, and we've continued on with that intellectualism, and we've lost the value of the wisdom of the age. Those people who've lived lives like your mom and other people who have lived daily situations and aren't talking pie in the sky of some theory.
Right.
They're talking about the reality of what it's like to live day to day.
Well, don't you find that when you do interviews and all the interviews we've done over the years, for example, with the March for Life and the other the great interviews that we see all over the network, that some of the stories that get the most respect from the people who are sharing their own personal experience of how God has touched your life. And all the great theologians we have and the amazing priests, that's awesome. But people are really touched by those personal stories. And everybody has had a mom or a dad, right? And if they haven't had a perfect relationship, I think they can also relate to this book. Because I didn't want to give the impression that we were always best buds and we hung out together and we agreed on everything, because we didn't. Right. But you could still love someone and disagree with them, which I don't even think we have that anymore in our world. Everybody has to agree on everything or else that you're in the cancel culture. But I just think it's really important, again, just to remind people that speaking from the heart is so, so important. That's what my mom did.
Right. Absolutely. And the idea, like you said, you can disagree with somebody on a particular issue. It doesn't mean they're a horrible person or an evil person. That's too much Saul Alinsky in the world we live in today, where people are demonized right away just for having a different opinion. Now, in her life, obviously, it wasn't easy either. You guys lived in, where are they, out of Brooklyn or wherever at one time, and then moved to Jersey City, or where were they?
Yeah, Jersey City. I was born in Jersey City. I was 5 or 6 years old, and I actually say we got blown out of the East Coast because
yeah,
there was an apartment
was
explosion, a major explosion. There was a gas explosion in our apartment building in Jersey City, and that was my first TV debut. ABC Channel 7, WABC came out to Jersey City, and I was in my father's arms. I was 4 years old, and half the building was blown off.
Right. Okay.
And we literally had to go live with our relatives in Jersey City, you know, my mother's family. And then my dad was offered an engineering job in Michigan. His brother had already moved out to the Detroit area. Mm-hmm. But it was incredible. I think that was a really rude awakening. And what was interesting too is when I was writing about it, I was remembering all these stories and I was putting myself in her shoes. What was it like to survive something like that? Two people died in that explosion. It was on the front page of the Jersey City Journal. Again, WABC was there. Other news media were there. I was in my father's arms when this interview was happening. And to me, it was just a reminder of, wow, back then, nobody went to, like, therapy or counseling, right? It really wasn't something. This was back in the early 60s, so it really wasn't something that was done on a regular basis. And you know, the people from the tough people from the East Coast, you just plowed through. In America, right. We just plow through. Right. And so I often think about how strong she really was. I mean, we had that famous book and movie, Steel Magnolias. I say my mom and her sisters are the steel tomatoes, you know, from the East Coast, to the East Coast. So yeah, we were literally blown out of Jersey City into Michigan, and a pretty incredible experience. And there's actually, you can go online, I actually found a picture of the apartment building, and it's amazing that we actually survived. They put my sister Roseanne, the firefighters put her in a tree while they were trying to get the apartment. You know, pretty amazing story.
Right. It's interesting too, because as you were saying with that, the idea of the greatest generation, you talk about that in the book as well, and that's the kind of stoicism you would see in your mom and your dad, right?
Yeah, and we think about, Deacon Dom and I were just talking about this the other day, you think about how far this country has fallen, Doug. If you talk about the greatest generation, what are we talking, maybe 80 years ago, right, with after World War II, that's what we call the group the greatest generation. And think about the way they lived their lives and what they did for America, and how so many people today can't stand this country and are dissing it so much and pushing it aside. And this country is, I feel, if we don't get back to what I'm talking about in this book, is that this, the very basics of our existence, of who we are, maybe we got, I'm worried where we go from here. That's why it's a fun book. It makes people laugh.
Right.
But my hope is that people also think and look at what's going on in our world right now.
Well, I like the idea. You also talked about the idea that she had a deep connection with the Blessed Mother. The strong Italian-American mother often turned for guidance to the strong Jewish mother of all mothers.
Yeah. She would say before I went out on a date, remember the Blessed Mother, M-U-T-H-A, is watching you. Now try to do anything funny, right? If you hear that in the back of your head. You know, she was very sneaky, Rosie, but she was very wise, because she knew planting that image in my head would make me think twice.
Right. And you said earlier one of her favorite Rosieisms was, offer it up to God and put it on the foot of the cross, in her, obviously, Jersey City accent. It was interesting too, because you also talk about her as a person. Sounds like she was into malapropisms to some degree. It often twists and confuses common cliches. I've had it with you girls from throwing in the table.
Throwing in the table. What else you say? Cat walks in on little fog feet, as opposed to fog walks in on little cat feet. You know what's funny though, is now I'm.
You're saying the same thing.
And Dom is calling me Rosie because I'm saying some of these things, right? And choose to forget. And one of my friends who owns corporate travel, does you know John Hale, right?
Yeah, sure.
He would go see her, and she'd say, "Oh, the travel guy came to visit me today." She couldn't remember his name, and she called him the travel guy. But yeah, she would always do that with the little thing. She'd always get them confused and mixed up. We used to tease her so much, but she had a really good sense of humor. She was just a sweetheart.
Right. You also said, as I grew older, talking about yourself and your situation, I found my way back to the Catholic Church, however, discovered that another feisty Italian-American, a real powerhouse, reminded me even more of Rosie. Her name was Mother Angelica.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I every time I hear one of the little audio clips that we have that we use as bumpers in radio, or I see one of her videos on the network, again, yeah, she was a lot like my mom, and I think that it's Italian blood has a lot to do with it. Think about Mother. She's a very brilliant woman. She knew the faith inside and out, but she was so real. And that's why I think she was so popular. She was so real, and she was so down to earth, and she could relate to anybody.
Right. You play off the other, her expression about the foot of the cross, with the cross is not negotiable, sweetheart.
Negotiable, sweetheart. I love that saying. Right, I love that saying. That's like my mom, right? Offer it up to God and put it at the foot of the cross. And when I was growing up, I'd say, well, why does God want my headache, or why does God want my pains, or why does God want to know about the fight I had with my friend? But what she was teaching me is that even if you don't understand it, you turn it over to God.
Right.
And you connect your sufferings with his, and then you pray through that. And that suffering, really, she was talking about, if you think about it, she never had any formal education beyond high school, my mother. But she was talking about the theology of suffering, which is so deep in the Catholic Church.
Right.
And even though she may not even have known that there was teaching on that, and that many of the saints have written and spoken about that, she understood it from a spiritual perspective and from a personal perspective.
Right. You even talk about one of her expressions, it's not all peaches and cream, you know.
Mm-hmm. And that one she got from my grandma Tamio, Anna, whose maiden name was Giorgio, from Basilica to Italy. And she would tell me my grandma Tamio came over from Italy when she was a child. And so she didn't have an Italian accent. She too had an Eastern accent. And she would tell me when I'd go to visit her and I'd be upset about something, my grandma and they'd both be in the kitchen together. And never forget it, Doug. They lived in an apartment in Jersey City right by the Hudson. You could look down, you could see the Statue of Liberty, and you could see the Hudson River. Mm-hmm. It's right by the Colgate factory. But she'd look at me and she'd say, you know, Teresa, honey, it's not all peaches and cream. Mm-hmm. And she said that to me on my wedding day. She called me. She couldn't make it to our wedding because she was struggling with arthritis at the time, my grandmother. And she called me and reminded me of that on my wedding day. He's going to drive you crazy. His dirty socks are going to be around. It's not all peaches and cream. Offer it up.
Right. Well, what's interesting too is not only you have the chapters with the various sayings that you play off of here, basically 10, but you also at the end of each chapter have set it up. You got a prayer or reflection, saintly words of wisdom, some reflection questions. Why'd you decide to set it up that way?
Because I always like people to take time to kind of reflect and think after they read something, because it's very easy to pick up a book and say, well, that's nice, or you know, that's a good thing to remember, but then we go on about our day and we don't remember it. When you slow down and you read a quote and you actually have reflection questions and write something down, it forces you to think it through and to really kind of process it and apply it in life. And I also wanted this to be offered for a study so people could use this as a study, because there's Catholic theology throughout this. And so they could sit down with this book and do it with friends, do it at their parish, whatever, use it for a week. It's been really well received so far. People like that. They like to be able to reflect, and we don't reflect anymore. How many of us really reflect or stop and think anymore, right?
No, absolutely. Well, because we're so inundated, bombarded by so much information coming at us all the time. And in the saintly words for wisdom, I know you like St. Teresa of Avila. She's right up front here.
Yep.
Out of suffering comes the serious mind, out of salvation the grateful heart, out of endurance fortitude, out of deliverance faith. Patient endurance attends to all things.
Yeah. St. Teresa of Avila, but she also had a sense of humor. She was Spanish, wasn't Italian, but also very feisty. And my mother named me after her, and she didn't really think about St. Teresa of Avila in terms of her you know, vast volumes of writing and whatnot. She just liked the spelling of it because it was more Mediterranean, T-E versus T-H, which is more French. Mm-hmm. And then I brought home a book of saints one day. She's sitting there on the couch reading it, looking up at me. And she looks and she goes, oh, for crying out loud, it was providential I named you after her. Because she was reading about St. Teresa having a big mouth, St. Teresa getting in trouble, you know, some of the attributes that I had as a child and still have as an adult. But yeah. So she was full of wisdom. My wife started to study it more seriously. She did go to Bible study, got involved in some events at her parish when we had to move her into assisted living because she couldn't stay in her home anymore. I would come to her place and we'd sit, and they had a book club, and there were many Catholics and other Christians. And I'd go to Mass with her there at least once a week, and they had a Bible study, and she loved it. She was very involved in it, and her faith meant a lot to her.
You talk about in the chapter having the idea of the Blessed Mother's always watching you. You talked about the idea with a big smile, a dash of Catholic guilt into the mix. Guilt can be a good thing sometimes, right?
You know, I think it gets a bad rap. It's not about condemnation, right? Mm-hmm. Because we know there is no condemnation in those who have Jesus, as Scripture tells us. But how many times do you and I talk about on the air, there's no one taking any responsibility for anything, and there's no one having any remorse. And I'm not talking about guilt. You know what, Lord, I'm really sorry. I know you forgive me, but I'm really sorry for what I did. And I'm going to keep that in my mind to remember that feeling that I don't want to disappoint you anymore. Again, it's not about condemnation, but nowadays nobody wants to take responsibility for anything. Right. And they just want to do whatever they want to do to whomever. And I think, you know, a little dose of that Catholic guilt, it's not a bad thing at all. I think it really helps us. I know Teresa Avila talks about that too, to remembering what you did. And, you know, Father Solanus Casey, who was here in the Detroit area, always said gratitude is the first sign of a rational thinking human being. And I think that gratitude comes with reflection and remembering the good, the bad, and the ugly about your past, and being thankful for the forgiveness of God.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And besides, if you don't feel guilty about something you did that was wrong, you're more like a sociopath. So there's nothing wrong with at least realizing. Except the words we hear today is, it's not my fault, this usually comes out right after whatever issue that comes up, as you say. You say research shows that some 92 million selfies are taken every day. According to mental health experts, there's been a greater focus in recent years on building up young people's self-esteem. That, combined with the internet and social media, encourages young people to concentrate obsessively on themselves and their own public image. And we're seeing the fruits or lack of fruits from that, aren't we?
Yeah, and there has to be a balance. I mean, no one says you shouldn't have confidence in yourself as a human being, because we're all made beautifully and individually by God in His image and likeness. But it's to the point now where, I don't know if this drives you crazy, or if you're at like a tourist site and you see all these people posing, and they take up all the time, and they stop other people from even coming in and seeing the particular site because they want that perfect selfie to post on, you know, the internet. Right. It really is a very narcissistic, I think, society that we're living in, and it's all about me, and we're seeing that more and more. And even with young people who can't take, a lot of young people, I mean all people, but we see it in young people who have been raised in this culture of selfies and media and TikTok and constantly doing videos of themselves and putting it out there for approval, that they have a very hard time with anyone disagreeing with them, anyone trying to correct them. And that's really problematic, because it doesn't prepare you for the real world.
Well, as you know, if you rely on other people to build up your own self-worth, well, then obviously when they're not supportive, it tears down your self-worth. So you're allowing people you don't even know to basically control your own emotions.
Exactly. And when we see the studies in terms of the connection of depression, we know the Surgeon General just last year, remember that big report he put out about depression among children and young people on Facebook? And then this year, he said there has to be warning labels on social media sites because of the damage it does, because kids spend so much time on social media looking for that affirmation. And yet, at the end of the day, there's also an epidemic of loneliness, so we're not doing ourselves any good. But again, I think it's not that complicated. I think we make it complicated. The basics that I give in this book, the top 10 things, they've been around forever. Like Ecclesiastes says, you know, nothing new under the sun.
These are
just the basic truths of who we are. Objective truth, natural law, with a little spice of Italian Catholic guilt thrown in there that my mother raised us on. These sayings we heard all the time.
Well, this is one I wanted to ask you about. You've got here, do you see how the Lord can make limoncello out of the lemons in our lives? Now, I heard about lemonade. I didn't know that he was making limoncello. Is that just in Italy or something?
Well, limoncello now, thank goodness, is sold all over the world, especially all over the United States. But you know where I got a great limoncello recipe?
Yeah.
From Joan Lewis.
Joan Lewis, she makes her own, right, yes, absolutely, yes. That's right, come to my apartment and have some limoncello, right.
Yep.
That's right, she was our Vatican chef.
Yes, exactly. The idea of Romans 8:28, all things work for good for those who love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. That what we've gone through, Mother Angelica talked about this all the time, what we go through, God will use. He will use it if we allow Him to use it. He'll use it for good. And, you know, He can make lemonade, limoncello, lemon gelato, lemon sorbet, whatever you like, out of the lemons in your life.
You say one of my favorite stories having to do with your mom, and my Aunt Teresa the Stoop, and a big dill pickle. What's that story?
Well, you know stoops, right? You're from the East Coast. So the stoops, to those who don't know what they are, they're the steps going up into an apartment or, you know, the places that people live on the East Coast, especially in the more compacted cities, they have the stoops that go up. Right. So my mom told the story about how she had a crush on one of the local kids in high school, right? But it was after school, and the boy was coming down the street, and my mom was eating a big, big, big dill pickle. She loved dill pickles. And so she said to my Aunt Teresa, who was sitting next to her, hold my pickle so she could look real pretty when her hopefully soon to be boyfriend walks by. And the guy walks by, he says hi, and she's smiling and sitting there and trying to look all pretty. And then she turns after he walks away and the pickle's all gone. My Aunt Teresa ate the pickle. I don't know why that story stuck in my mind, but I just thought it was such a cute story of sisterhood.
Right, exactly. You also talk about I wanted to ask you, did you ever actually go swimming in a garbage can?
Yes, I did. I tried. Yeah, because my mother was very frustrated with this one summer. True story. And that's one of the messages I have for people. And there's a method to the madness. But my sister and I complained. Our neighbors had a big pool. I always wanted a pool growing up. And my mother said, "We can't afford a pool. For crying out loud, you think money grows on trees? You want a pool? Go fill up a garbage can." So my sister and I thought, wow, what a great idea. Mm-hmm. So there was a new garbage can that my dad had purchased that they hadn't used yet. We rinsed it all out. And we put the water in it. We were too dumb to figure out that we should have gotten in the garbage can first and then put the water in it. But either way, we thought we'll have our own miniature pool. And we played with it for hours and, you know, until we realized that we should get in before we put the water in. But yeah, we literally went swimming in a garbage can.
There you go. And also, at the end of the book, you also include resources. Why did you decide to put those in the back of the book?
Because, you know me, I always like to give people resources. And notice we have EWTN right up there, Ave Maria Radio. We try to give as many resources as possible because we want people to, my goal as a talk show host, my goal as an author and a speaker is always to get people to go further. And there's so many great resources out there. And I want them to get familiar with coming to us, with coming to Ave, with coming to going to these different resources and following up on what we're saying to learn more about the faith. I mean, one of the things I love about EWTN.com, I don't even know if people know this, but if you put in a document, you know this, I'm just sharing it with our viewers, You put in a document like Humana Vitae, almost immediately EWTN pops up and then you have that link to the document. So in addition to obviously archives and information on our programs, you have available to all of our viewers Catholic documents if they want to read a papal encyclical, if they want to read a statement from the bishops, all of that is there. And not enough people, I think, access those resources and take the time to see what the church has to offer. So I just love, I mean, I'm all about attribution, which is something journalists, I don't know what happened to it, it's gone now, and providing, establishing where do I get my information and how do I come up with this. I didn't make this up. This was given to us by God. And so I always try to back that up with resources. Right.
Yeah, with the original sources and not somebody's interpretation of it, which so many people quote quotes of quotes. All right. Thank you so much, Teresa Tomeo. Everything's coming up. Rosie, 10 things my feisty Italian American mom taught me about living a godly life. We all need these insights. Available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com. For all things Catholic, I'm Doug Keck. Thank you so much, Teresa. Thank you all for joining us.